morning. We're going to continue today with our series in the book of Proverbs. Good to have everybody with us, and especially those of you that have chosen to visit with us today. We're glad that you're here and hope that you can come back and be with us again soon. This morning's lesson is entitled Joy in Living. The book of Proverbs is Solomon, of course, the wise king of Israel, teaching lessons and imparting wisdom to his son is the theme of the book. And Solomon is showing his son, sitting him down and trying to teach him how he can enjoy a good life by following this wisdom. So this morning's lesson is going to be how we can have joy in life by following wisdom. And Solomon spends a lot of time trying to show his son how the decisions that he makes in life are going to lead to joy. Or, you know, there's other alternative. You know, decisions will lead you to great sorrow. And so it's very important, you know, the outcome that we have, the result that we get, whether it's joy or sorrow, it's going to be greatly based on decisions that we make. So we want to implement the example of what Solomon has to teach us in these Proverbs, make applications to ourselves and those that are parents that still have an opportunity to teach their children these things as they grow up. Teach just as Solomon is trying to teach his son these things so that his son will benefit from these teachings and not make bad decisions, because bad decisions bring a great deal of pain. Several verses that talk about this. Chapter 17, verse 22 says, "A joyful heart is good medicine, but a broken spirit dries up the bones." And when you look at that, it's pretty obvious which side of the equation you want to be on. You don't want to be on the dried up bone part of that. You want to be the one that has the joyful heart. In chapter 15, verse 13, same thing. A joyful heart makes a cheerful face, but when the heart is sad, the spirit is broken. And again, you know which side of that you would like to be on. You don't want to be a broken spirit. You can sometimes, you know, you can't tell 100% what somebody is thinking or what somebody is feeling by the way that their face looks, but many times you can make an assumption, right? If they look like they're having a bad day, if they look like they're upset, then chances are, you know, you've made the right assumption when you look at them. But a joyful heart makes a cheerful face. Verse 15 of chapter 15, "All the days of the afflicted are bad, but a cheerful heart has a continual feast." So when Solomon imparts this wisdom to his son, it would be pretty obvious which direction his son would want to go and which life he would want to have. You know, these two things are diametrically opposed in each one of these verses. It's a 180-degree turnaround as far as what are you going to be? Do you want to be cheerful? You want to be sad? Do you want to be broken? Do you want to be afflicted? Or do you want to be joyful in life? Well, the wise writer has a lot to say about that. So first of all, we're going to look at what Solomon has to say about sorrow. In chapter 18, verse 15, or verse 14 rather, "A man's spirit can endure sickness, but who can lift up a broken spirit?" So Solomon's pointing out here that we can endure a lot. And sometimes, you know, you come across somebody, or maybe it's you yourself, that there are times in your life when there is so much that you have to endure. And it's a heavy burden. You know, we go through illnesses. We go through aches and pains. Or it may be somebody in our family that's suffering, and there's really not a whole lot that we can do about it except to be there and try to comfort them. And so we go through difficult times of suffering. You face trials and crises in your life. And Solomon says a man's spirit can endure that, but a broken spirit, you know, when you're downtrodden and depressed, that's difficult. The crushing of your spirit, he says, is hard to overcome. And I know there are many people here that have had those kind of times in their life that they have felt that way. that you are downtrodden from physical sickness or depression or emotional things that happen. And certainly there are things that happen that we can't avoid, that we had no choice that those things happen to us or happen to someone else. But sometimes there's things that, and we'll see throughout this lesson, there's choices that we make that bring upon the downtrodden spirit. The effects of divorce, the effects of sexual infidelity, those are things that greatly distress people. The emotional damage that comes from malicious words that may be hurled towards you. Or maybe you've had malicious words towards somebody else and you have broken relationships, and so that causes problems in your life. So these are things that, when Solomon says that you can endure sickness but a broken spirit, there's a lot of things that can cause a broken spirit. And a lot of those things are sinful. A lot of those things are brought on by not following the wisdom that we find in the Scripture. So Solomon's pointing out the internal pain from not living the life that you should is severe. Another thing that is interesting, in fact, I probably found this verse more interesting than just about anyone that I've read so far in the book. In chapter 14, verse 10, each heart knows its own bitterness, and no one else can share its joy. What does that mean? It means that sometimes it's hard for other people to understand your suffering. You can have people that are sympathetic to your situation, but no one knows the hurt like you know the hurt. And I understand that sometimes we get wrapped up in ourselves and we think, well, nobody else feels the way that I've done. Nobody else has ever experienced this. But coming at it from another point, I'll just use my mother as an example. When my sister Jill passed away at age 19, people would try to be sympathetic. They would try to say things, oh, Joyce, I know how you feel. And she would think, no, you don't. Because there's no way anybody else could feel the way that I feel, or somebody that hasn't been through the same situation couldn't know how she felt. And when somebody is grieving, when somebody is going through a situation, we that try to comfort, we look for the right words. We look for the right thing to say. And there's not always a good thing to say. There's not always the perfect. There's not going to be something perfect that you can say that's going to make the situation better. But one of the things that my mom has carried with her was one of her sisters, not physical sisters, but sisters in Christ, came to her and said, Joyce, I don't know what you're going through, but I'm not going to let you go through it alone. And she remembered that saying. That's the best that we can do, is to let somebody know. And Solomon says, each heart knows its own bitterness and no one else can share its joy. Chapter 25 and verse 20 says, singing cheerful songs to a sermon with a heavy heart, or a person with a heavy heart, is like taking someone's coat in cold weather, or pouring vinegar in a wound. Sometimes it's difficult to cheer somebody up. And maybe you don't need to try to cheer somebody up that's grieving. In fact, my mom wrote a book several years after my sister's death called Will You Help Me Wipe My Tears? And it was a book about grief and how to help those that are grieving. And so I believe that's what Solomon is saying here. It's hard for people to understand how difficult a situation may be. It doesn't necessarily have to be about the death of a child, and that certainly is something that would be very, very stressful. and unexpected. And there are other situations that people deal with sickness and other things that happen with their families or loved ones. But Solomon says, people who are trying to be helpful with cheery words are simply adding to the pain. Saying things like, it could be worse, or other people have it worse than you do, is not a comfort to one with a heavy heart. So the point of looking at these Proverbs is to remind ourselves, you know, not that, well, you don't want to go through difficult times. That's not the point here, is that you need to avoid difficult times at all costs. But what we do need to understand is that there will be times of anguish, and Solomon wants his child to be able to endure those things. He also wants his son to be able to help others who are having to endure those things. But if there's any overriding point in Proverbs, it's that we don't want to cause suffering by bad decisions. We don't want to have suffering in our own lives because of bad decisions that we made, and we don't want to cause suffering in the lives of others. So there are decisions that sometimes we don't really think a whole lot about that really have a tremendous effect on our lives, and there's a ripple effect. And decisions that sometimes may seem kind of small at the time are very impactful. You know, choices like, you know, where you go to college or who you marry and where you live, what you decide to choose for an occupation. I know we probably understand that those are big decisions and that they're important. But sometimes those decisions really carry a big impact for our lives and really alter the course of your life. And bad decisions in these areas can cause a lot of problems and pain. So let's look at the Proverbs that teach us how to have joy by making good decisions. Sinful decisions bring sorrow. Righteous decisions bring joy. That's pretty obvious. You didn't need to hear me say that to know that. But chapter 10, verse 28, the hope of the righteous is gladness, but the expectation of the wicked perishes. So what do you have on the two different sides here? You have righteous and you have wicked. What do you have on the righteous side? You have hope on the righteous side. What do you have on the wicked side? You have perishing. And so that's the expectation of the wicked, is that they perish. The expectation of the righteous is hope. So which do you want? Well, you want hope. You want to be righteous. And so that's the expectation that comes from righteous living, and that is a joyful life. You would expect that those that are Christians, those that have hope in general, would be joyful. And I know, like what we just said, there are times in people's lives when they're undergoing stress because of things that are happening, that joy may be temporarily suppressed. But in general, the righteous are going to be joyful in their life. And so you have that expectation as a Christian. And also the expectation of those who are not going to follow God's law, that are going to violate God's law, is going to be stress. It's going to be perishing. What if somebody asked you if you decided to give up on God and decided to stop obeying His commands, how would it change your life? What would you do? What would you change in your life if you decided to give up on God? I heard somebody respond to that question one time. And what he said is, there's nothing that I would change in my life, because God's laws, even if I didn't believe in God, have led me to have a good life now. That being moral, being honest, and, you know, living according to God's laws had brought him a lot of peace, had brought him a lot of joy. And others in the business world respected him because of his honesty. And so to say, what would you do if you just want to throw God out the window? You know, you're just going to let loose and do whatever it is that you want to do. How is it that you would change your life? I don't know that there's a lot of that every person that would be asked that question would answer it in the same way that he did. But I think there's a lot of people that are so tempted by sin that they may say, well, you know, there's a whole lot of things that I would do. But just think about that for a minute. Do you suppose that going and committing adultery is something that's going to make you happy? Some people may think so. Evidently, there's millions of people that think so because it's done quite a bit. But are they happy? I mean, are those the happiest people that you see on earth, or the ones that are out there committing fornication and committing adultery? Do people that steal, is that going to make them happy? You know, that's what I would do if I gave up on God. I would just go steal. That's going to give me lots of money. That's going to make me happy. A lot of people do that. We live in Helena, which is supposedly one of the best places in Alabama to live. There's not a lot of crime, and it's a kind of a small town atmosphere. But you know one thing that I still notice in Helena, Alabaster Pelham, is when you're driving by certain places on Friday or Saturday night, where are all the cars? Where are all the cars at night? They're at bars. They're at places where people are drinking late at night. That's where you see people congregating. And evidently, there's a lot of people that makes them really happy, is to go out and get drunk on the weekends, even in the best city in Alabama. Do we think that getting drunk every weekend, is that something that's going to make us happy if we gave up on God, going to clubs and bars and you know, any activity that's prohibited by God? That's what, if I could just let loose and do that, that's going to bring me true, lasting joy. Millions think so and engage in those activities, but yet what do they find? That's what Solomon is telling his son. Don't engage in activities of wickedness because you're not going to find any joy there. The hope of the righteous is gladness. Being righteous is joy. Being righteous brings gladness. It brings hope. But what can you expect by being wicked? To perish. And you've probably talked to so many people that have lived in sin and are not happy. People that have backgrounds of promiscuous activity, they're not happy when they think about that. And people who have used drugs and abused alcohol and suffered under the influence of those things, most people don't look back at those things and say, oh, I'm so glad that I did that. I'm so glad that I spent my money doing that. You know, my body is so much better off now that I have participated in those things. Verse 6 of chapter 29 says, an evil man is snared by his own sin, but a righteous one can sing and be glad. Again, who is it that's glad? It's the righteous one that's glad. Living the righteous life is the way to be glad. But those that have tried living the life of selfishness, you know, when does it become enough for them? Are they still seeking more? And maybe that's what people try. They try working outrageous hours, but they haven't found satisfaction through their work. They tried accumulating wealth only to find out that they still are wanting more, or they tried seeking happiness in all kinds of different ways, yet they don't have any kind of emotional stability and that spiritual void in their life is still there, because those physical things don't meet that need. What Solomon is saying, that you are just hurting yourself by committing yourselves to sin. So when you get trapped by vices and get addicted to sex or to alcohol, to drugs, possessions, or whatever it might be, do we think that we can find happiness that way by getting addicted to those things? Solomon says an evil man is snared by that. And when you talk about a snare, you know it's a trap. It's something that you get caught in. If you get caught in a physical snare, that's not a good thing. When you get caught in a spiritual snare, an evil snare, that's not a good thing. We can't find happiness by becoming slaves to ungodliness. Solomon also says that we need to make wise plans to have joyful living. Chapter 24, verse 27. Prepare your work outside and get everything ready for you in the field, and after that, build your house. Now, this is a very interesting proverb. And this, if you just look at this and say, well, this doesn't apply to me because I'm not building a house. This is not talking about building a house. It's an idiom that is using this as an illustration. Solomon is teaching his son about planning. And when you look in Proverbs and you read the passages that talk about the worthy woman or the excellent woman, in chapter 14 and verse 1, it says that the wise woman builds her house, but the foolish tears it down with her own hands. And you read that and you think, well, she must be an incredible woman that understands a lot about building and saws and wood and hammers and nails. No, it's not talking about that. This wise woman, she sets the tone for the house. She has a dramatic impact on the house. She has a dramatic impact upon her marriage. She has a dramatic impact on her children. And so what's being talked about here is the impact that she has. That the wise woman is one who is going to build up the house, and the foolish tears it down. And so here, 24 verse 27, prepare your work outside, get everything ready for you in the field, and after that build your house. Psalm is talking about the wisdom of planning, about building a home. And he wants his child to know this, to do things in the proper order. Now, so what does that mean in practicality? Do people do things out of order? When we do things out of order, what happens? We're more likely to have problems. And marriage is a really good place to apply this. Marriage is to be last because you get other things prepared first. You get prepared to have you get prepared to be married. But what do we see in the world today? Well, we see people doing things out of order. We see people having children first, and then they get married, and then they get a job, and then they, years later, try to get an education. Well, that's kind of out of order. And I think that's not the thing that Solomon would have encouraged here. Solomon is saying, make preparations for work first. Go get some training, then get your house. And so, once all these are in place, then that's good. And sometimes people do things out of order. Unfortunately, I have members of my extended family that did some things out of order. Had babies before they got married. Had babies before they could provide for them, before they had a job. And so how has that been? Is that something that everybody should stand back and applaud that? But people in the world do that today. It seems that doesn't carry the same shame as it once did. And I understand that once somebody's in that situation, they need to to make the best of it and take care of the children. But sometimes people go into that and they plan to do that. They plan to have a child out of wedlock. And we don't need to cheerlead people to make bad decisions. After reading the Proverbs that we've read over the last few weeks or months, do you think Solomon would have applauded his son for making bad decisions? You know, certainly not. But those in my family that have made poor decisions in that regard, they have suffered in many ways over the years because things were done out of order. And it's really hard to get a life back on track when those things are done out of order. Solomon doesn't want his son to make poor choices. He's saying there's stages in which you do these things. Work, get everything in order, then go out and build your house. And, you know, lives go through turmoil because someone ignored following the proper order. Solomon wants his son to think things through. And when life decisions are not made in proper order, you know, we are just asking for problems. In verse 3 and 4 of chapter 24, by wisdom a house is built, and through understanding it is established. Through knowledge its rooms are filled with precious and pleasant treasures. Solomon uses the same picture here of building a house, and he says that wisdom and knowledge and understanding are required to build a good home, you know, for your spouse, for yourself, for your children. And if you want that house to be pleasant, if you want it to be full of pleasant treasures, as he says, not talking about, you know, physical things, but having a pleasant home life, then what does that take? Well, it takes planning. It takes wisdom. And that wisdom starts with doing that in the proper order. So you decide carefully about your work and your home and your marriage and your family. Chapter 19 and verse 2. I don't think I have that on the screen here. Let's see. Yeah, I do. Desire without knowledge is not good. And one who moves too hurriedly misses the way. So what's Solomon telling his son here? Well, just because you want to do something does not make it a good idea. That's pretty obvious, isn't it? That you think things through first. You think of the impact of your decisions. You make wise plans before following through with your desires. And I know that's something that comes with wisdom. It comes with experience, because if you've ever been one that jumps to conclusions or made rash decisions and then had to go back and change it later, and Jarrell gets on to me about that sometimes with camp stuff, that I'll announce something before I've thought it through. And you don't have to tell everybody everything. You need to think about the consequence of what you're saying there. But sometimes we think something's so good and we think we've planned it out, but we haven't sought anybody else's counsel, and maybe we haven't thought of every implication. Hasty decisions can lead to severe consequences, and it can change the course of your life. If you're not following the wisdom that Solomon is telling his son here, we're just not using the resources that God has given us to have a good life now. And that's what we've said from the very beginning of this series, is that this book can help us to have a good life now, not just in the future, in eternity, but following this can help us now. We all want that. We want our children to have a better life than what we have led for ourselves. And I believe that's one thing that Solomon is getting across to his son, because Solomon didn't always make the right decisions. But you see some things that Solomon suggests that are counter to what Solomon actually did in some areas. And he certainly knew a lot about women and gives good advice on that. But God has given us His Word to teach us how to have the good life now. But society right now, there's just all different directions that society would push you into that are the opposite of what God would have. And those things are not fulfilling. And you have to put things in God's perspective and do things in the proper order. Realize that your children are more valuable than wealth. And you make decisions that will bring joy to your home and not sorrow. And don't waste your time in vain, empty activities. I know a couple of people that at different times in their life that they were near what you call rock bottom in their life, and that they tried all the things that the world offered. They tried wealth, they tried partying and all the things that went along with that, and experimented with all different kinds of things. But then through the grace of God came out of that and realized that was a total waste of time, a waste of resources. But what it left was it left scars, it left problems. And those people had come to realize that God's laws made sense. And there's probably those here today that have been through different things similar to that. They've tried different things, and then they realize one day that God's way makes sense. Why did God give us this instruction? Because His kids will sometimes tell their parents, "Well, you just don't want me to have any fun. You just want to hold me back. You don't want me to have any fun." And that's what God did. God sat back and said, "How can I make everybody miserable? How can I make everybody's life horrible? How can I make them not love me?" Sometimes that's what kids think their parents do. God didn't give us these laws out of wrath or hate. He gave us these things out of love. He loves us so much that He doesn't want to see us put ourselves through the pain and suffering of making bad decisions. A good parent would not want to see their child hurt themselves with bad decisions. God doesn't want us to hurt ourselves, so He wrote a book to tell us how it is that we ought to live. He knew that we would need help. He knew that we would need guidance. He also knew that we weren't going to do everything that He told us to do. He knew that we would follow our own desires. He knew that some would try to do things and try things out for themselves. Jesus saw that. He looked at Jerusalem. He wept over Jerusalem. He came in contact all the time with those who weren't going down the right path. But the thing is that God gave us a way to get well. He gave us, no parent would think twice about whether or not they're going to do something that would help heal their child. And God, sent Jesus to die for us so that He could heal us spiritually, heal us from the bad decisions that we can make. That's why Jesus said in Matthew chapter 11, verse 28, you know, come to me, all you that are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest. God wants to protect us from bad decisions. Solomon wanted to protect his son from bad decisions. Let's use the wisdom that God has given us so that we can have joyful living in this life. And let's encourage others that way as well. If you're subject to the invitation and have not done what you need to do to have that joy in your life by being obedient to Jesus Christ, we invite you to come while we stand together and sing.